I'll go around and say hello to people, starting with Karen and Linda. Linda, we have, might have two Lindas tonight. Where are you located again, Linda?
Portland, Oregon.
Oh, yeah. Well, we can't differentiate you that way. Let's see. It looks like the other Linda might have dropped off anyway. Anyway, hello, Linda.
Hi.
And Shane. Mick. Sam. Mark W. Charles. Choketsu. Marv. Paul. Katie, John, Jim, Bob, Bob K, Susan, Franklin, Joan, Jill, Kathy at the ranch, Drew, and Ruth Ann. All right, well, I hope everybody had a restful or enjoyable holiday and or enjoyable holiday. Let's see. In terms of announcements, excuse me. I have filled in the Bright Ways End calendar more or less at least through June. The basics are filled in through the end of the year, and there is a session on the schedule for August. You know, fingers crossed that an in-person session can actually happen. I guess we'll do something online if we can't, but come on, by that point, gotta be able to do it. Let's see. So go ahead and check the calendar on the website in terms of, you know, retreat days or term student program or those kinds of things that you might want to put on your own calendar. Let's see. We now have a bound chant book. Does anybody have one nearby you can lift up and show? There we go. Sweet. So that has all of our chants, and I'm kind of thinking we'll start rotating what chant we do on Tuesdays again, because we have like five different chants that we usually go through, but we've just been doing the same one all the time because we figured you had to print it. But so we have this chant book, and I think what we'll do probably is just get in the habit of putting a link to the PDF of the chant book in case you don't have the physical copy, and then you can look through. And if you are someone who does really want a physical copy, you can email me and I'll see if I can make that happen. yeah, I guess that's about it. Anything anybody else can think of that I should mention? Although there is a one-day retreat in January. I think it's the 23rd. So that'll be an online thing. That's sweet day to make a nice quiet day with community. And so the schedule is on the website, and it has communal practice and, you know, practice on recommended practice for during the other times. All right. So tonight we are continuing with Norman Fisher's book, The World Could Be Otherwise, about the Bodhisattva path and particularly the paramitas. And we're on the second half of chapter 5 on the paramita, or the perfection of joyful effort, or virya. So he, Fisher translates it as joyful effort. This paramita is often also translated as diligence or energy or zeal. And I wanted to, last class, to review a little bit, last class I had us brainstorm various things, various answers to the question, what are other ways to describe virya? and how does it show up in our lives? And we came up with a neat list, which I figured I would share so we can look at it again. So we came up with diligence, zeal, energy, enthusiasm, excitement, abundance, engagement, love, possibilities, passion, vim, vigor, vitality, empowerment, delight, fuel, conviction, confidence, wonder, fealty, courage, purpose, limitlessness, determination, hopefulness, unselfishness, calm, enjoyment, intentionality, authenticity, deep connection to something you feel is true or meaningful. And then we also brainstormed, like, what is the joyful aspect of it? What, you know, what makes effort like this joyful? So just to review some of the cool concepts that Fisher talked about in the first part of the chapter, he talked about this being like one part of binocular vision, he said. So with one way of vision, one eye, we see the complexity of the world, of cause and effect, the problems. And with the other eye, we see with this bodhisattva eye, this eye of joyful effort that sees the possibility, sees the extraordinary human potential, and feels a great determination. And he said with both of those eyes, then you're able to perceive some depth and possibility and possibility of movement. So he also talked about laziness as being, laziness is kind of by definition a lack of joyful effort. So the absence of virya manifests as laziness. And he says the ultimate source of laziness is our semi-blind view of our lives. That's a really interesting way to put it. And if you think about it, I'm fond of talking about, you know, what if you knew this was the last day of your life? You know, how would you engage it differently? You know, everything that you did would be like, you know, wow, I'm eating a meal. Wow, I'm going to sleep. Wow, I mean, everything, even the negative things would be kind of precious, right? Because you only have one day left. And that, in a way, that's like, this could be our last day at all times. This could be the last day of our lives. And I don't think any of us really want to be living as if, you know, one day, you've seen one day, you've seen them all. So that kind of tuning out of our lives is part of this delusion. So really the lack of joyful effort, the laziness is not, we don't see it so much as like a, some kind of character flaw or something, as just, we're out of touch with reality if we're failing to engage our lives in this joyful way. And then he talked about flow. So this is on page 122. And I just love this description. This is the great secret of joyful effort, and perhaps its most important aspect. Joyful effort isn't something you do. Joyful effort is life. It's sharing life. It comes to you from elsewhere, flows through you when you are ready to allow it. Once you stop getting in its way, stop straining, stop thinking your life is yours and up to you, energy somehow appears. Just enough energy given the condition of your body and circumstances. So this week, we're moving on to I like how there's just his chapters are they're coherent. You can read them, but he just brings in a lot of different things. So there's a lot of different topics that get pulled in under the heading of each of these paramitas. So he started off this second part of the chapter talking about vow. So the vow in this sense, I guess he would say he didn't define it exactly, but a clear intention formed for the sake of the well-being of self and others. So it's a positive vow, right? It's not like I vow to make $1 million. It has a bit more of a spiritual tone to it. But for the sake of well-being of self and others. And a vow can be something that we obviously take publicly and formally, like marriage vows or like to follow the precepts and stuff. A vow could also be private, but it needs to be clearly stated enough that you don't forget it, or you temporarily forget it, but you'll be reminded of it. It has to be like, you can't deny that the vow happened, as opposed to kind of a fleeting intention, like, I should really exercise more. That's not a vow, right? That's a little kind of like maybe sense that you might be well off to do something. But a vow is a more clearly stated intention. And vows give shape to our lives. So I talk about, particularly in terms of the precepts, when we vow, when we formally become Buddhists and we vow to follow the Bodhisattva precepts, I said it's good to keep the vows around. So you do your best to keep the vows, but when you break them, you don't ditch them. When you break them, you simply recognize that, and then the vows are there for reference. You have decided that you want to shape your life in this way. And so even when you break the vow, you keep it around and try to recommit to it. And an interesting thing about vows, I mean, vows is a whole complicated practice in and of itself. But something I find interesting is, so I guess Gandhi was a big one on making vows. And he said, when you make a vow, you should make the vow and then stop thinking about it. like in a way, that's, you've made a decision. Stop, you know, don't be second guessing the vow, basically. Because, you know, the whole point of it is to rely on it to give shape to your life. So it's like, make the vow and then get on living your life and let the vow help shape it. Fisher said vows are soul surgery. So he said you remove the commitment to self-concern and insert vow in its place. That's a very interesting way to put it. Because as he talks about later, the intention to act for the welfare of self and other, to keep the well-being of beings in mind, is the defining thing. So whenever we notice, if we've taken that vow, that when self-concern arises, which inevitably it does, then we like replace it with the vow. And there are small vows versus endless profound vows. So, and they take different kinds of skills. There's different kinds of skills in deciding what kind of vows to make for your own life. But in terms of our Bodhisattva vows, which this book is about the Bodhisattva path. So the Bodhisattva vows are, beings are numberless. I vow to free them. And it doesn't say it explicitly, but it means I vow to free them all. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them all. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them all. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. So I vow the Buddha way is unsurpassable, but I vow to completely master it, to become it. So these vows, these more profound vows, are about seeing our life as a journey that involves learning and growth and challenge, development, direction. And then, and I don't know, you know, if you took a poll of people in our society, I wonder how many of them would see their life as a journey. You know, as opposed to just, I don't know, you're just biding your time. You're just trying to enjoy yourself and stay out of trouble. I would imagine that people who see their life as a journey would probably define themselves as either spiritual or religious. In some ways, that might be, you know, perhaps the definition of it, is trying to give our lives some meaning and context and direction. So, in terms of our bodhisattva vows, how do these vows actually manifest in our lives? So what opportunities, when we're talking about joyful effort, we're talking about this virya, joyful effort, you know, in our lives, what opportunities do these vows give us to practice joyful effort? So looking at our vows, beings are numberless, I vow to free them. What does it mean to free a being? Can you do that? Do you help beings free themselves? What are some of the many ways that we can help people become happier and freer from suffering? Delusions. What are some examples of delusions we vow to end in ourselves? What about delusions in our community or society? How do you end a delusion? How do you recognize a delusion? If you're caught in a delusion, how do you recognize it? A Dharma gate is an opportunity for learning and growth. And what forms do Dharma gates take in our lives? What does it mean to enter them? What do we mean by the Buddha way? Or this journey toward enlightenment? How do we imperfect bodhisattvas embody this way? Can we be said to embody it before we even become Buddhas? So I hope that I can convey with these questions that this is not a mere intellectual exercise. I know that sometimes people have different ways of engaging the Dharma, different ways of learning generally, and sometimes the exploration of words, you know, what does this mean? What's the Bodhisattva way? What does it mean to embody it? May seem like an intellectual exercise. And we're certainly using words, and to some extent, the deepest truths can't be conveyed in words. And our direct experience can't be conveyed in words, but words are a doorway to our understanding. Whereas we say, like the finger pointing at the moon, right? It may not be the moon, but it is in a way for you to be able to see the moon. So I mean to say, to really ask yourself, if not now, then later, what is a Dharma gate? What do I think the Buddha way really is? A question, a real question for yourself that will touch your heart and have relevance for you. So there are no wrong answers. The point is not the answer. The point is engaging the question. So that said, I wanted to put us into breakout rooms, and each breakout room will take one of those bodhisattva vows. Either beings are numberless, I vow to free them. It's kind of the easiest one, but I'm sure there's plenty of complexity you could find there. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. And I will put the vow in the chat so that you can see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable, I vow to embody it. And the question is really, what does this line really mean? So answer this by translating the line into different words. They don't have to be glamorous words, but just to pick different words in that process. Kind of, okay, so what does this line really say? And then what are some forms that fulfillment of this vow take in real life? What, in other words, what are the opportunities for joyful effort provided by this vow? So, you know, Dharma Gate, what is a Dharma Gate? How might that appear in our lives? And then, you know, some examples of how that might appear. So choose a secretary to report back. And let me see, I believe that if I put the vows into the chat now, then I believe you'll be able to see them even once you're in a breakout room. If not, I will go into the breakout rooms and give you them. So let me see. If I divide us into, we got to do four rooms, and room, I think you're able to tell when you go to your room what room number you have. So room one will take the first line, room two will take the second, three the third, and four the fourth. And I'll go buzz around in the rooms to let's see. So room one, Bob K will be in that room. Room two, Charles will be in that room, just to kind of, okay, in case you lose track. So Charles, your group will have delusions. Franklin in room three will have Dharma Gates. And room four, John will have the unsurpassable Buddha way, which should be no problem, right? All right. And oh, and pick a secretary so that they can write down, you know, what translation you came up with and some of your examples, and then we will share them when we get back.